heart, heart, turtle, turtle, Greek national flag.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, it's a geeky boner episode. We're going to talk about big holes, small episodic games, and a horror novel about fungus and a fireman.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Tim Wick.
I am Tim Wick.
And Molly Glover.
Hello, I am Molly Glover.
And this is a Geeky Boner episode. Geeky Boner episodes, for those of you who don't know, are
episodes... when we have erections.
It's when we talk about the nerdy things that we're really excited about to the point of genitals filling with blood.
Yeah.
Engorging.
Is that accurate?
I have to go. My genitals are filling up with
there
blood.
There are things that we geek out about that get us engorged.
Like, you can't stop thinking about it, or you do it all the time, or like, lately, it's just the thing that you want. But whenever you have free time, you want to go do it. Or,
yeah. The geeky thing that you're excited about.
Yeah.
Sexually.
The geeky things that you want to screw.
Right.
Aw, like Nick.
Tim, what's your geeky boner right now?
A little bit ago, got back from a trip with my family. We went to Utah, and actually it was like Nevada, Arizona, Utah, and we actually dipped our toes in Colorado.
Mm.
And we went to 7 national parks in 13 days.
Wow.
And it was a whirlwind, and it kind of sucked because there was so much stuff that I wanted to see more of.
Yeah.
But it was also pretty amazing because these are places that I've really wanted to get to, or I've wanted to get my kids to. So, like, we started at the Grand Canyon, which I've been to a couple of times. But, you know, I wanted my kids to see it because the kids will probably see it eventually. But here's the deal. You only get one chance at seeing the Grand Canyon for the first time.
Sure.
And I wanted to be there when my kids saw it for the first time.
I totally get that.
Looks nice.
Did they look up from their phones? Like, were they impressed?
Hey, you mean their Nintendo 3DSs?
Sure.
You do. It is.
Or iPads. Yeah.
They were. Yeah. I mean, Devin, much more than Alex. Devin is, Alex is full teenager.
Oh, yeah.
But he's straight up jaded. Yeah, straight up jaded. There was like two points in the entire trip where he was impressed by anything. The Grand Canyon was one of them. He was like, this is really amazing.
Cool.
Was the other time when you did something embarrassing?
No.
And he was like, yeah, this is all right.
No, it wasn't then. It should have been. But Devin actually, this is sad, but a couple of nights ago, he came downstairs and he was crying. And we were like, well, what's wrong? He's like, I keep thinking about the trip and wishing we could go back.
Aww. That's so sweet.
Hopefully someday Devin won't listen to this and be horribly embarrassed. But
I hope he is.
because it was a lot of hiking. Devin was super into the hiking. We'd be going into a park. He's like, are we going to go for a hike today?
Awesome.
And how long a hike are we going to go to? And what are we going to go see? And he liked the big, long hikes. And
I'm a fan.
And my favorite moment with Alex was at the Grand Canyon. There's a place called Desert View, which is basically the far eastern end of the park.
Okay.
And you get there's this tower that was built by a lady by the name of Mary Coulter, by the way. She's an architect who came from St. Paul, Minnesota.
A lady architect?
Yeah.
What?
At the turn of the century, no less. But anyway, so she designed this really cool watchtower. And at the top, there are these periscope kind of things. You look down into them, and there's a mirror that reflects the view of the Grand Canyon.
Oh, neat.
Upside down. And I don't know why they did it, but it's really kind of cool. But you got to look at it at the right angle. So I like look into these things, and the kids don't know. They're just looking around at the Grand Canyon, thinking it's kind of cool. And I'm looking down into the thing. I'm like, oh, this is cool. Devin, you should come over and look at this. And he's like, what? And he looks down. He's like, oh, that's really, really neat. Alex, you got to look. And Alex being Alex, is like, okay, and he looks, and he's just looking at it wrong. And Devin's like, no, you got to look down at the mirror. And Alex, this is literally what Alex said. He's like, what? Dang. That's freaky.
That's awesome.
So,
what am I supposed to look?
Damn.
And like,
it was the moment where the whole veneer of teenagers just went away.
Yep.
And he could not help but be impressed.
Yeah.
My
sister, we went to Costa Rica as a family. My mom turned 50. And so my sister was 12. And we're, almost 12. So we're driving around, and everywhere, it's Costa Rica. So every time we're out of the resort, you're seeing, you know, fucking dogs and garbage and shanties and all this stuff. But so we get out, we're going to take this boat thing, and we're walking to the dock, and this dog runs up to us, and my sister, Madeline, leans down and pets the dog, and she's like, oh, that's a good boy. And she stands up and goes, with all of their, like, preteen angst she can muster, goes, ugh, finally I get to pet a Costa Rican dog. like it was like we had just been keeping this from her whole life, and it was just the most amazing. Yeah, that to me sums up like teenage, like, ugh, about stuff.
So the best thing, the thing that just was my moment of really cool experience, was we figured out we were staying in Moab, which is really close to two national parks, Canyonlands and Arches. We spent 2 full days in Arches. We had a great time. We hiked the shit out of Arches.
Yeah.
And also Double Arch at Arches is where the opening of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade takes place.
Seriously?
So it's where the Cross of Coronado.
What?
Yes.
Why did Nick, we have to go?
It's so great. I wore my Raiders of the Lost Ark shirt that day.
That's my favorite one.
It was nerdy
That's
as hell.
That's my favorite one of
and
the movies.
And the kids were like climbing up these rocks in there. And they're even making jokes about looking for the caves. And, Dad, there are no caves up here. There's no Cross of Coronado up here. I'm like, of course not. They took that away years ago.
They had to close it.
Anyway, so...
Two people came looking after the movie.
Yeah, there were too many kids that didn't listen to their dad. And so they had to close it.
So we figured out that Mesa Verde was only 2.5 hours from Moab. And made a decision to go there on one of the days where we were kind of not sure what exactly we were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And Mesa Verde is this national park that is devoted to Native
Green
American
Mesas.
Cliff dwellings, which is, there are like over 600 cliff dwellings that are built in the side of this mesa. And I mean, from like every single goddamn alcove in the cliff face of these mesas,
that's awesome,
has at least one fucking building in it. And there are some that had 50 buildings in them.
Are the stairs like carved in on the outside or the inside?
They actually built paths down to a couple of them. They, in fact, didn't have stairs. They lived in the cliff dwelling, and they farmed on the top of the mesa, and they had climbing holes to get from the cliff dwelling to the farm on the top of the mesa.
That's amazing.
And we were only able to be there for 6 hours. We managed to take a ranger-led tour of one of the cliff dwellings. And not only were both of the kids just completely floored and completely engaged in all of this, but it just was the most amazing experience. You know, they're talking about these. You're looking at these cliff dwellings, you know, 600 cliff dwellings in the national park.
Yeah.
Then there's a Ute reservation which is connected to the national park. And the ranger said, we don't know how many cliff dwellings there are in the Ute reservation because they haven't counted. But he said, it's at least another 600.
Oh,
so
my God.
It's over 1,000. And they lived in these cliff dwellings for about 100 years and then left.
And no one knows why they just left, right?
They don't know.
Yeah.
They don't know. Now, it's not like they went extinct.
Right.
So these are ancient Puebloan cultures. The Pueblo Indians are direct descendants.
Mm-hmm.
So at some point, the ancient Puebloans, a bunch of them, moved into these cliff dwellings. They stayed there for about 100 years. Then they moved out, and they never went back. Now, moving out after 100 years turns out not that unusual, because what the ancient Puebloans would do is they would build settlements. They would basically farm out the land. They would hunt out the animals. They would log all the trees. And then they would move on.
That's
but
crazy.
Maybe 300 to 400 years, anywhere between 1 and 400 years later, when the trees had grown back and the deer herd had returned, would return.
Huh.
So they built all this shit, and then they never came back.
Interesting.
Which is weird.
Do they know when they were living there?
They do, between the mid-1200s and the mid-1300s.
God, that's cool.
I mean, the amount of stuff they know about this place, and I could literally, we could do like 5 fucking podcasts about this, even though I was only there for 6 hours. But the amount of stuff they know about this place is freaking amazing, because like their garbage dump was toss shit over the side of a cliff.
Yeah.
So they've been able to excavate their garbage dumps, and they can say,
and strata,
all right.
Strata and everything, too.
And they're,
yeah.
They're like, this is the garbage they were throwing away near the beginning of the time they were in the cliff dwellings, i.e. carcasses of deer mm-hmm. and large mammals. And then by the time they left, there are carcasses of squirrels and rabbits because the deer and the large mammals have moved away as they've chopped down all the trees. They find their burial sites, and they can say, all right, well, we know that at the beginning, that the people who died closer to the beginning of the time they lived in the cliff dwellings, they have much better teeth, and the reason for that is because they're eating better food. They're eating meat, as opposed to by the end of the time they're in the cliff dwellings, when they're eating very little meat, mostly corn. Well, the way they grind corn is with stone, which means a little bit of grit gets into the corn, and that grinds down your teeth, and it causes worse teeth.
So
they can
cool.
date this stuff. They can date burials to within 10 years, because they buried every single person that was buried with a pot, and their pot designs changed every 10 years. Almost like clockwork. So it's like they find a burial site, and they find the pot that's in that burial site, and they can be like, well, this came from this period.
That's so cool.
Because of this design. It was just, so, I mean,
yeah,
there was, I could talk about this trip forever because it was really just amazing, and I'm posting pictures on Facebook.
I'm mega envious of that trip. I first of all, I can't remember. I don't think I've taken a vacation longer than 3 or 4 days since I was a child. But then to get to go somewhere and do all this awesome outdoor hiking and learn more about our actual country and stuff is just so cool.
Yeah, in Zion, we went up and we hiked on this trail where it's not the Angel's Landing, which is like one of the iconic trails that they have, but which is also scary as fuck. But this trail, it's like you're literally going around the edge of a cliff, and there's chains in the wall. And
I saw a picture.
It's a 3 foot wide path, and on one side there's chains, and on the other side there's 800 feet straight down.
That sounds amazing. I would walk the hell out of that. That
chains are
awesome.
Death.
That sounds great.
I am scared to death of heights. But I will. I'm kind of that. It pisses me off that I'm scared of heights.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I get that.
I was like, I got to that, and I'm like, oh, fuck.
That's awesome.
And then I managed to get around, and we got to this little hidden canyon that's up, and you walk down this canyon for like a mile, and it's just, you know, you can't get that kind of experience anywhere else.
No, it's literally singular.
We saw Zion snails.
Oh, those little, you showed those, they were like teeny.
They're
like
the smallest snail on earth. You can fit like 10 of them on your thumbnail.
They look pinheads.
They're practically pinheads. They only live in seeps in a like 300 yard area of Zion Canyon.
So
that's
cool.
The only place they
did,
live on earth.
Did you pee in the Grand Canyon?
Did I pee in the Grand Canyon?
Yeah. It seems like a natural question, right?
It is a natural question. You know, I didn't think of it. That's kind of funny. But
you want to, like, I mean, it's this amazing, huge thing. You just want to, like, add yourself to
God,
it, you
like
know?
That's the most male thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
I don't know. Like you know, like,
I didn't even,
I own this now. Like, this is my Grand Canyon.
Leave only footprints and urine.
The great thing about the Grand Canyon is Devin was very frustrated. We were only there for a day, and he wanted so bad to hike down into it.
Oh, yeah.
He was like,
too.
I want to go into the canyon. And it's like, I know. But, I mean, going into the canyon.
Careful what you wish for, a monkey's paw.
the trails down the canyon, it's like, it is, to get all the way down, it takes a half day to get down.
Yeah.
And then you got to camp overnight because it takes at least a full day to get back up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you're going down a mile and then you have to go back up a mile and that takes a long time.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
There was a trail we could have gone down about like 3/4 of a mile down.
Donkey rides.
You could have done the donkey rides. The donkey rides were an option, but we chose not.
You should tell him that the Grand Canyon burned down. You should tell him it burned down. You can't
Grand
take
Canyon.
Him back anymore. And see if he gets skeptical enough to be like,
oh my
how
God,
did it would, burn down? Be like, would, it burned to the ground and it's just gone. It's not even like, a hole anymore now. It's
Nazis
just fire.
Nazis showed up with napalm and they burned it all down.
Be
don't
like,
play with matches.
That is bullshit, Daddy. That is bullshit. Anyway, so, yeah. You know, we should go on to other boners. But Molly? This is a gigantic... Just
clearly.
It is.
Huge. I can feel it from here.
Yeah. Your crevasse
my
is
boner
ironically
pales.
A large, large boner.
My boner pales in comparison. I mean,
tell us about your pale boner.
My pale and small boner is for the Telltale Games Game of Thrones game, which I am close to finishing, and I fucking love. I love all the Telltale games, so...
Is it mobile app or?
It's an Xbox game, Xbox, but you can also play it on the computer. I believe, like Steam.
Probably iPad and phone as well.
Okay. Probably iPad. Yeah, I suppose I played.
Almost all the Telltale
I played
games.
The Wolf Among Us on my iPad. Yeah. So Telltale is a company that they're currently what they're best known for are these games where they're mostly narrative story games. There's very little combat. What combat there is very slow and easy. Like it'll be like it's timing. It's like. Push A now, hit to the side. And so you have to, I mean, you have to pay attention.
Quick button action.
Yeah, quick button action, but not like any real skill. I mean,
or quick time event, that's what it is. Yeah.
But what they are, they in different IPs, you're a character and you are making decisions. People will talk to you and then there'll be four options you can for responding. And then the time bar is just shrinking. You have a limited amount of time. Not saying anything is also a response.
Uh-huh.
And then there's always a deliberate not saying anything response too. And those are considered different things. Failure to make a choice is different than choosing silence.
Mm.
And then so whatever you say, usually the options are pretty, it's usually like you say it one way, or you say it the other way, or there's kind of a middle ground. But the first one I played was The Walking Dead, and it was really great. You're a guy who finds a little girl, and you know, you're survivors, and it's finding other people, and much like the comic The Walking Dead, you know, the real danger is the other people, and you have to make a lot of decisions, like, you know, it'll be like, do you take the food or do you leave the food? Like you find an abandoned car, lights on, all the doors are open, no people, but clearly they were just here. Car's full of supplies. Do you take the supplies or do you leave the supplies? And no matter what you do, someone's not happy. That's the best message of a Telltale game. You cannot make everyone happy. Literally impossible. So and when you say certain things to people, they'll ask you a question. You make your response, and sometimes when they go back, it goes back to that character's face, and they answer you. A little thing will pop up over their head in the corner that'll say, like, you know, Cersei will remember that, or Cersei noticed your silence, or Marjorie is unhappy with your answer. And or things like that.
Oh, fuck.
Like you failed to please the king or whatever. And so but then it auto saves a lot. So the it's got great replayability as long as you like the game. A lot of people don't like basically just being walked through a story and making choices. Mm-hmm. But I love it because it reminds me of
interactive novels.
It's like choose your own adventure. It reminds me of those. And I loved those as a kid, but there's no take back. So that's the best part. You can't, when I would read those books, I would have like all of my fingers shoved in various pages to be able to go back and be like, no. I want to go back to that decision. No, I want to go back to the decision before that, you know, and see. But, so the Game of Thrones one is really great because, and I'm probably going to spoil this a little bit. So if you want to play the game, just, I don't know, fast forward 5 minutes. so you play as a member, as various members of House Forrester. And this is the first Telltale game where you're not just one character. Usually you're just this one character the whole game through.
The Borderlands series.
The Borderlands one switches?
You play as two different protagonists.
Okay. You have four or five different protagonists in this one because they keep dying. And I mean, it's just
Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's Game of Thrones. And so, yeah. So whereas before there might be like one or two people might die in The Walking Dead, one or two people might die and it's a big deal. But in this, it's happening constantly. And so one of your characters is a cup holder to House Forrester who has taken it upon himself to try to find the North Grove up past the wall where, you know, supposedly they can save us against some problems. Or Mira Forrester, who is the eldest daughter who's been instilled in King's Landing. She's in King's Landing as a handmaiden to Queen Marjorie. Or you are Asher Forrester, who's been exiled off to the Free Cities, and he's in Marine, and he's a sellsword now, but he needs to come home because you need an army. Or you're the Lord Forrester, who is there trying to protect his house from the other neighboring house, the White Hills. They're fighting over the Ironwood Grove. It's super great. So you switch back and forth a lot. There's all this intrigue, and you'll be playing a character, and they'll say, well, we know we can count on Mira's help. And you're like, okay, I got to remember. Got to try to get Mira when I'm Mira to try to help the family. And so it everything you do, I mean, it matters. There's huge decision trees that branch out, so you don't know. And after every episode, so each episode's about 6 chapters, and there's 6 episodes. After every episode finishes, it gives you a list of statistics of big decisions you had to make. Maybe you didn't even realize they were big decisions. And it'll say things like, you and 23% of other players burned the letter. Or you and 58.6% of players tried to kill Ramsay. And so it's interesting to see if you were among the more popular choices or the less popular choices. And so there's times where I'm like, there was one where it was like, you and 10% of other players did a thing. And I'm like,
what the fuck?
And I was like, am I an evil, horrible person? Like, why didn't they do the thing? Like, why did everyone else not do the thing? And so knowing that there's this small contingent of people that are going to see a version of the game that you're going to see that the majority of other people didn't see is cool. And then you can go back and play again once you played through and play, make all your different choices and be a monster or be whatever you want. So I don't know. I really like it, and I'm going to go home and play it tonight. I'm very excited because I've got just this one last episode left. So everything's going to get wrapped up, and I'm going to find out what happens to House Forrester, and do we defeat the White Hill Menace, and what happens to the Lord of the, oh, it's so exciting.
My first Telltale game would have been like Sam and Max when they brought that series.
Oh yeah,
back.
They did Sam and Max and they did the Escape from Monkey Island, yeah. Curse of Monkey Island games.
You've talked about a Telltale game before, I think.
Walking Dead, I think. Or it might have been. I might have talked about the Borderlands one. Anyway, yeah. Which you need no knowledge of the Borderlands series to play.
I hope
it.
I didn't already talk about the Game of Thrones game because I'm going to feel really embarrassed.
No,
this is the
first time. Yeah, yeah. You haven't talked about that.
Super embarrassed.
The Borderlands one is super funny.
Yeah.
Like and dark and deadly and but you know hilarious too. I really laughed super hard during the Borderlands one.
Which you know they don't give percentages on that. So
yeah.
No, but I wanted to go back just to replay to get different characters and hear different jokes and different. I mean, there's so much replayability. You know, they're fun.
Absolutely.
Airplane games.
I liked it a lot, so I'm excited. Nick Glover.
Yo.
What is your boner?
My boner is I am. God, maybe like 3/4 of the way done with this book that I am listening to, audiobook. It is by Joe Hill. It's called The Fireman.
Ooh,
and it is
so good.
Molly started reading it after I did, and because she's reading it, not listening to it, she cruised ahead of me and finished the book. And so I am lagging behind her, and she knows everything that is ahead of me. But it really reminds me a lot of The Girl with All the Gifts, which I really loved, which is a kind of a newish take on a post-apocalyptic zombie. Whatever. This is more like, God, it's funny, and I don't know if I'm saying this because Joe Hill is Stephen King's son or because I just reread The Stand, like, in the past 4 months. But The Fireman reminds me of The Stand in a lot of ways because there's an illness sweeping through America that is fungal.
Exceedingly contagious.
It is incredibly contagious. Fungal infection that causes what seems to be spontaneous human combustion. You get stripes on your skin from the
black and gold stripes
where the fungus is, and if you get agitated or some of your vital stats go a little crazy, you combust. You'll start on fire and you burn alive. And everyone has it. Like, nobody doesn't have it. Like,
or they don't have it, and the people who don't have it are very tribalistic against those who
yes.
do. There's death
so
rituals. Yeah.
There's but it reminds me of The Stand in a number of ways, not just because there are a couple characters who are named in such a way that I think are kind of tribute, homage-type characters to characters in The Stand, like Harold, but also because I feel like it shows that because there are like good people who do bad things
mm-hmm.
and then there are kind of like bad people or questionable people who do the right thing. And then there are good people who do good things and bad people who do bad things.
Mm-hmm.
And that might sound really generic, but I think if you think of like the good and evil that's in The Stand, that's something that this book has that it's but it's not as black and white.
Yeah,
it's absolutely not as like the good side versus the evil side. This is like the I don't know. It's more subjective than just good and evil.
Like any good. I mean, Joe Hill is I hate to I'm sure he gets tired of being compared to his father a lot, but he really does have a similar sense of style. Yeah. and a similar way of seeing how, you know, the evil in people is sometimes worse than any supernatural evil.
Yeah.
that can come upon us.
Like,
you know?
The Walking Dead. Like, the zombies are like weather patterns.
Yeah.
You know, you can deal with them. You can prepare for them. You can run from them. But people are the real monsters.
Yeah.
In this, it's very much the same. This fungal infection can be controlled, and you can survive it, and it can actually be quite beneficial, perhaps, maybe. And so the fungus isn't really necessarily the most dangerous thing that's happening. People are the most dangerous thing that are happening.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And it's...
On both sides.
On both sides, totally. The people who are sick, the people who are healthy, like... It doesn't matter. People are the biggest, most dangerous thing. And there's a lot of, like reveal type twist and turn stuff that I don't want to ruin for anybody, and I'm not done with it yet, so I can't
I couldn't even ruin it if I wanted to.
Yeah, I can ruin it. Yeah, but ruin it.
it's really, really great. And the protagonist is this nurse, Harper Willows, who, you know, she has a little bit of medical experience and super complicated relationship with her husband type guy that I don't want to talk about because it's important to the book, but it's very, very fun to read about and very, like, oh my god, high tension stuff. And then the fireman is this guy that she meets that he's dressed in
fireman's clothes.
Yeah, he's a British guy dressed in like a fireman's clothes who drives around in an antique fire truck, and he's kind of like an action hero of the story, and he's kind of a prick, and he's kind of great. He's pretty fantastic. Like it's almost farcical how much he is kind of. He always wanted to be a rock star, and so whenever he gets to be like the action hero type savior guy who saves the day and swoops in, like, he fucking loves every minute of it. But Harper knows he loves every minute of it, and so she relishes making fun of him for want for like fulfilling this desire to be a rock star and to be the action hero and to save the day and stuff. And,
absolutely.
And I don't know. It's
really good. I really recommend reading it. It's a fast, good read.
Yeah.
It's a good summer read.
I'm always down to read something from Joe Hill ever since I read, Lock and Key, the comic series that he wrote that is being adapted as a television show again, this time for real, you guys, seriously. They did a pilot and it didn't go anywhere before, but Cargill recommended it on Twitter.
He's got pretty good taste.
I was like, oh shit, it's out. And it's good. And he says it's good. So, I mean, I probably would have bought it eventually anyway, but I got reminded by Cargill on Twitter and just saying like, it's holy shit, it's a good book. And I agree. Holy shit, it's a great book.
Yeah. Mm.
So, you know, it occurs to me, I was just looking at the calendar. This episode, it is coming out the week of Convergence.
It is.
Oh, hey! So yay, Convergence!
We ought to mention, we haven't done a Convergence episode. That's cool. We've done plenty of Convergence
episodes. You get it.
We'll do an episode afterwards, maybe.
Yeah.
But we should mention that we, on Saturday, the 2nd of July, we are doing our live anniversary podcast at the convention. I've got our guests lined up. You guys don't even know who they are yet. It's Kelly McCullough, who's an author.
He's great,
and he's a good friend of mine. We've known each other since grade school.
Wow.
Then Amanda Marcotte, who's an online blogger and guest of honor,
Skeptics, right?
Is going to be our guest as well. So
wonderful.
That's pretty cool. That's Saturday at 2 p.m. We have... we all are on a bunch of other stuff too, so I'll try to make sure I link to our schedules.
Yeah, we'll post them for sure. I know the conspiracy improv panel that the three of us have done with Jeremy Stomberg, friend of the show, is back this year to tell you the truth about Monlock.
Monlock is peace.
And if you want to know more about Monlock, you should come to that panel.
Friday at 5, there's an update on Vermin. So if anybody, we've had some Vermin Kickstarter supporters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure yet. We are going to at least have some rough cuts of something to show.
Okay.
If not, episode 1 in its entirety to be premiered at the convention. So that's pretty cool.
That's
so
awesome.
I am currently doing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6... I am in 12 things right now.
Wow.
That's not counting if I do Ville 10. So you'll probably see me. I'm around.
Too much of you.
I'm around. So,
One really cool thing that, so I've never done anything at Connie Space Lounge, or not Space Lounge, but the Quantum Sandbox.
Yeah.
And I threw out this idea that the comic creators, Kelly Sue DeConnick and Matt Fraction, I just fucking love them. They're a married pair. They have kids. For their kids' birthday party one year, they built a huge cardboard city in the backyard and then gave all the kids monster costumes and let them just trash the city.
And videotaped it.
Yeah, and so I mentioned it as an idea for the Quantum Sandbox. So Thursday night, when the Quantum Sandbox closes, they're going to have an after-hours panel.
That's one of the things I counted.
That is building the cardboard city after ARC for adults.
And then the next morning, the kids get to smash it, and Nick and I are the commentators.
Yeah.
Providing color commentary of children smashing things.
So it sounds so great.
So really people excited. Can bring their kids in costume and have them just destroy a cardboard city and photographers.
Or you can drunkenly the night before.
I hope there will be video of that.
It seems like a solid opportunity for pictures and video.
Absolutely. So. The only other thing I'm going to mention, just because this is... takes me really out of my comfort zone. I am actually doing a reading because, as I've mentioned
with
a couple
Pablo,
of
times, right?
Philip Andrew Bennett Lowe, Pablo. So I've been doing a lot of writing online. If you like, every week I've been posting a short story, or nearly every week I've been posting a short story. So I'll be doing a public reading of some of those stories at 11 a.m.
That's exciting.
Saturday.
I'm doing something that scares me too. I am interviewing Joseph Scrimshaw for his Guest of Honor one-on-one.
Whoa.
So that's kind of crazy. I don't know. And he's like, I'll let you know what I want to do. I'm like, cool. All right. Well,
that's nuts. That's great.
Yeah, so that'll be fun.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. That's exciting.
I don't know what to say. It's going to be good.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Convergence is coming up. Come and watch
us
record live.
Yeah,
for sure.
Looking forward to it.
Otherwise, let's get to 5 questions. Who do we have answers from, Molly?
We have 5 answers from Ryan Stello. He says, attached, keep up the great work. And he's right, they are attached. I have them right here.
Oh, that's great. So he's honest.
Us off?
Hey, what movie do you will stop and watch anytime it's on?
Ravenous, with Guy Pearce and Robert Carlyle.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
I haven't.
It's good.
It's somewhat ignored, even by genre fans, as a mess. But for me, I love variety in a film. Through music and performance, it effectively morphs from satire to disgust to superhero epic, spoiler, within its short runtime. It may also make you want to go vegetarian after the first scene. I really want to see this.
I know a lot about the movie, but I haven't actually ever seen it. So, but Guy Pearce is pretty awesome.
I love Guy Pearce.
Question number 2, what is your geekiest or most prized possession?
My Shaun the Sheep stuffed plush from the Wallace and Gromit short, before he sold out with a TV series and movie and commercials for McDonald's.
Yeah, fuck you, Wallace and Gromit.
How dare they make money?
No, I don't
know.
That's awesome, though.
That's a cool toy.
Shaun the Sheep is so adorable.
Shaun the Sheep is, I mean, and I got a thing for sheep, but I'm just saying, like, Shaun the Sheep is a particularly cute one.
Yeah.
Plus, he doesn't have, like, bad sheep eyes.
Yeah.
He has cute sheep eyes.
Absolutely.
Cute sheep eyes. There's a difference.
Yeah.
All right, question number 3. What is your geekiest or most prized possession? Oh, no, that's the question we just asked.
Yep.
I don't know what the hell I'm talking about these days.
Question
number 3. Which supernatural being or whatever do you wish was real?
This one was hard, because even a somewhat cool, non-misogynistic god like Odin can still be a rapist asshole. I'd probably go with Ormazd, the sole god of Zoroastrianism. If only to see him plink into existence any time a monotheist asserts supremacy of their faith by virtue of originality. All right.
Right. Just to be contradictory. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Just, I like that.
This
like
is an original by...
And like, also, I'm a big fan of the onomatopoeia of plink. There he is.
I like yeah. Plink is a good word.
It's, yeah. It's right up there with bamf.
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah,
yeah. It is for teleportation sounds. Yeah. Yeah.
So question number four. Say religion is gone. What is the biggest problem that humanity now faces?
Greedy dicks.
Yeah.
In order for religion to be gone, a lot of the impulses to superstition and self-justified explanations for reality would be gone. However, shared impulses with fascism, like paranoia and a desire to take ownership of all things, including intangible concepts like love, would still exist. We'd still have to fight the folks whose only understanding of safety comes from tight control and dominance.
You hear that, Donald Trump?
Yeah.
You're the problem.
Yes.
He doesn't.
He doesn't hear it.
He didn't hear it.
He certainly doesn't hear he's the problem. That's for fucking sure.
Okay, question number five. What is your favorite quote?
Another listener covered my favorite, which is the Litany Against Fear from Dune. Mm. But my second favorite is a line of the poem for Aragorn. Not all who wander are lost.
That is a good quote.
It is.
That is a good quote.
That is. Thank you, Ryan. Ryan Stello. I am. Thank you for your answers. Those were very good.
Fantastic. Great.
It's a great quote for an episode where I was wandering all over Utah, but never lost.
Yes, it's true.
We only were crossing our fingers in hope. No. If you want to send your answers to our five questions, then you can send them to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. Otherwise, we'd appreciate if you'd like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. As always, you know, we have a Patreon campaign up. If you'd like to support us and what we're doing, we're trying to get better equipment, be able to provide, you know, like buttons and stickers and stuff to our listeners, and maybe do some fun field trips and extra bonus content that, you know, we'd love your support to help us do. And so if that sounds like something you might enjoy, or if you're just a fan of ours, check us out at patreon.com/geekswithoutgod. Where you can actually listen to a lot of our episodes early.
I'm going to do like a little photo essay about my Utah trip and we'll put it up just for Patreon support.
Yeah.
There you go.
Just for anyone that supports at any level.
If you want to see those amazing pictures of all of the great stuff that Tim was just describing, all you got to do is just throw us a buck.
And I promise the pictures will be genital free.
Yeah, you can guarantee that I do have a boner in the picture, but I was able to angle the camera in such a way that it didn't capture.
You can tell because his kids look disgusted.
That's true.
You can tell because his wife looks bored.
And on that note,
we've been Geeks Without God, and check us out next week.
Bye. Bye.
Hey, Tim, if you could sum up your vacation in one word, what would it be?
Grand?
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter @geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Can't be that important or I would have remembered it. Oh, that is so not true.